Chapter 11. Narrative Identity. Reading Hearts and Souls. Imagine you're chaperoning a school trip for 25 children. After the kids get off the bus, you dutifully take a head count in the lobby of the aquarium. You count 24. Yikes! You count again. 25. Hooray! You then march the kids in to explore the wonders of the sea. What's the problem? Why did you assume that 24 was incorrect but 25 was correct? Only because you have 25 students. So, when you counted the number that confirmed this, you stopped. But there was no reason to assume that it is any less likely that you counted one child twice, arriving at the correct number, than that you forgot to count one child the first time around. People tend to find whatever they're looking for and see what they expect to see. Always on the lookout for corroborating evidence that proves us right, we turn a blind eye to any evidence that doesn't conform to our expectations. This is a phenomenon known as confirmation bias. We home in on what confirms our thinking, and we subconsciously filter out inconsistencies. When confirmation bias is at work, the evidence arranges itself, almost mystically, into ready-labeled patterns. This is part of the neurobiological process the brain uses to make sense of the world. Our brains basically make files, just as we do on our computers. In our brains, this categorization falls under the umbrella of mental shortcuts called heuristics. These shortcuts allow us to process the world without making independent decisions every time we choose. Imagine if we had to solve every single problem from scratch. From how to operate the coffee maker to how to get to work. We'd never get anything done. Mental shortcuts save the day. Jumping to conclusions. Heuristics are useful for helping us solve problems efficiently, but they can lead to biases that cause us to slip into a guilty until proven innocent mode. For example, if a detective investigating a woman's murder knows that a high percentage of murdered women are killed by their spouses, they might be more likely to assume that the spouse did it and begin to mentally filter evidence to fit their theory. This is not to say that statistics aren't a useful tool. The challenge lies in giving them proportional rather than exclusive weight. If a doctor frequently treats people with depression, they might hear a patient's complaint of symptoms such as fatigue, energy loss, weight gain, and decreased libido, and leap to one particular conclusion. Aha, depression. But the problem could also be hypothyroidism, or 50 other maladies with similar symptoms. As the saying goes, to a hammer, everything looks like a nail. We also tend to fall back on the representativeness heuristic, whereby we group people into categories based on their similarities to a typical member of the group. Once you're labeled, it's assumed that you share all the features of other members in your category, and they share yours. If we have a preconceived notion about a particular group, we may jump to conclusions about individual members of that group, even stubbornly ignoring evidence that refutes our conclusions. In the words of William James, a great many people think they are thinking when they are merely rearranging their prejudices. Biases create expectations, not unlike our brain creating file folders to chunk information together. We develop schemas or blueprints that help us anticipate what we'll find when we encounter a particular concept, category, person, or situation. Schemas help us fill in the blanks quickly. Unfortunately, they can nudge us to fill in some of those blanks with wrong answers. If we approach new information with a preconceived notion that it should fit into our grand schema, we may keep information that conforms to our expectations and discard information that doesn't. Bringing awareness to our biases helps neutralize their impact and enhances our ability to evaluate another person or situation objectively. If we enter a conversation, negotiation, or personal relationship believing that we know everything already, then our ego will deftly confirm all that we believe to be true. Only the exceptional person is willing to look at what they don't want to see, listen to what they don't want to hear, and believe that which they wish did not exist. But this is only half the story. It is an elegant irony that once we diffuse the heuristic impact that interferes with our assessment, we can more effectively build a profile, in large part because of heuristics. The director's cut. We are aware that people tend to find whatever they're looking for and see what they expect to see. Our assessment crystallizes when we ask, why does a person need to see that which they are looking for in the first place? People see themselves, others, and their world in the way they need to in order to reconcile what they are seeing with their personal narrative, to make sense of themselves, their choices, and their lives. This leads to what psychologist Daniel Kahneman terms associative coherence, the notion that everything reinforces everything else. He writes, our chronic discomfort with ambiguity leads us to predictable, comfortable, familiar interpretations, even if they are only partial representations of or fully disconnected from reality. Other things that don't fit fall away by the wayside. We're enforcing coherent interpretations. We see the world as much more coherent than it is. The greater our ego, the more vulnerable we feel, and the greater our drive to predict and control our world. Coherence, not facts, feeds the belief that the world is predictable and known. We then seek out, see, and interpret the world to fit our narrative, rather than adjusting our worldview to fit reality. Essentially, we color the world so that we are untainted. Sanity is synonymous with perspective. The clearer our perspective, the more reality we allow in, and the more objective and rational are our attitudes, thoughts, and behaviors. When we refuse to responsibly acknowledge any aspect of ourselves or our lives, the ego engages to protect us, and it shifts the blame elsewhere. In other words, we think, if there is nothing wrong with me, then there must be something wrong with you. For us to remain unblemished in our own minds, we are forced to distort the world around us. And if our grasp on reality is flawed, then our adjustment to life will suffer. Emotional instability is fundamentally a lack of clarity in the degree to which the ego colors our ability to see ourselves and the world as it is. When a person loses his sanity, the ability to see, accept, and respond to his world, it means that he has lost all perspective. Mirror, mirror on the wall. Ralph Waldo Emerson writes, people do not seem to realize that their opinion of the world is also a confession of character. This is not just a clever quip, but a piercing insight into human nature. People look at the world as a reflection of themselves. If they see the world as a corrupt place, they feel on some level, unconsciously probably, that they are corrupt. If they see honest working people, that is frequently how they see themselves. That's why the con artist is the first one to accuse another of cheating. The old saying, what Susie says about Sally says more of Susie than of Sally, turns out to have a strong psychological basis. Research finds that when you ask someone to rate the personality of another person, a close colleague, an acquaintance, or a friend, their response gains you direct insight into their personality traits and their own emotional health. Indeed, findings show a huge suite of negative personality traits are associated with viewing others negatively. Specifically, the level of negativity the rater uses in describing the other person and the simple tendency to see people negatively indicates a greater likelihood of depression and various personality disorders, including narcissism and antisocial behavior. Similarly, how positively we see others correlates with how happy, kind-hearted, and emotionally stable we are. Proper, egoless perspective gives you the ability to zero in on the good in your world and in others. Our focus becomes our experience, our reality. We decide what is brought into our purview. Your ego narrates your world, using heuristics to regulate what comes in and what stays out of conscious awareness. The less emotionally healthy someone is, the more they denigrate the world around them to compensate for their own shortcomings and to accommodate their own insecurities. Hence, how someone treats you is a reflection of their own emotional health and says everything about them and nothing about you. We give love. We give respect. If someone doesn't love themselves, what do you expect them to give back? The emotionally healthy person is authentic, true to themselves, and non-judgmental, accepting of others. The real I shines through, and their perception of reality is clearer. As a person's self-esteem erodes and their ego engages, their perspective becomes skewed. Where there's smoke, there's fire. Research published in the Journal of Pediatrics examined characteristics of various smoke alarms to determine which ones work best to wake children. They found that a sleeping child was about 3 times more likely to be awakened by an alarm that used their mother's recorded voice than by the typical tone alarm. This response is courtesy of a filtering mechanism located at the base of the brain, the reticular activating system, or RAS. The RAS keeps us from being overwhelmed by unnecessary stimuli, or in the case of mom's voice in an emergency, ensures that we respond to what's important. Our objectives, and in some instances our fears, dictate what we deem important and whether we unconsciously dismiss or consciously accept something. For example, ego-based narrative leads to orients the RAS, leads to filters through heuristics equals perspective, what we see and what we think about what we see. Let's say when conversing at a cocktail party, you become aware of another conversation, and by shifting your attention, you mute the person in front of you and pick up what is being said farther away. That's the RAS in action as well. It is powerful, as is what it uncovers. An individual orients their RAS to what is significant, and significance is defined by what they need to see. What they zero in on broadcasts who they are and their perspective on life. Poker Corner. I said earlier that on the flop in Texas Hold'em, a player will look briefly at his hole cards and then look away if he's got a strong hand. It's also true that if a player looks to his chips after the flop, then he might have a strong hand. The reason is that focus follows interest, and if he wants to bet, then he's going to check to see how much he has and will telegraph his interest by gazing at his chips. When we take notice of how people see themselves and their world, what attracts their attention and what they avoid, what they mention and what they miss, what they condemn and what they defend, what they accept and what they reject, we know their story of I. Or, put differently, the what they focus on and see tells you the why they focus on it, and the why tells you the who they really are. As human beings, we seek to make sense of ourselves and our world through stories. And the story that guides our lives is the one that explains who I am and why I am. This is our narrative identity, the internalized evolving story of the self that we each construct to provide our lives with a sense of purpose and unity. The story of I faithfully projects not just who we are, but where we've been and where we're going. Just like any good story, ours needs a cohesive plot. It needs to make sense. Once we've constructed our narrative, we humans are compelled to maintain it. It's both self-defining and all too self-confining. When a crack appears in our personal narrative, the ego needs to do a quick rewrite to explain what is happening and why. We create a new story to explain our interpersonal interactions, the behavior of others, as well as explain our own behavior to ourselves and to others. The ego gives birth to a new narrative. In the next chapter, we will see how we quite literally change our story.